It's time for a love poem. Shelter. We were there in that dark with the bleat and the crying around us. I could still hear you in that other language, speaking to them, to the lambs. I stood still and wouldn't move, fearful to go and fearful to stay. The storm's voice coming from without, the animal's voice within. And I knew them, that they were safe now. Then the luxury of the lambs came down, and you were there where you wished to be, upon me, rippling out and outer with a sound of wind over wind and rain over rain, of wool over wool and flesh over flesh, the sound of a sound folding into itself, until my bones were glad to be that frame over which my skin, like a tent, had stretched itself. Now we're going to go somewhere else. Part of the pleasure of writing for me and part of the pleasure of theater is that you get to be somebody else or pretend to. And some of these poems do that. They go into other places, other people. Let's see. I'm going to read you a poem about a drawing. The drawing was made by a Dutch master of the Renaissance, Hendrik Goltzius. I'd never heard of him, but there was a fabulous drawing, a reproduction of one of his drawings in a New Yorker. And I couldn't get away from that hand. It was gnarled up and scraped, and the fingers were all twisted, and I wondered why I was so fascinated by it. It made sense to me later. So Goltzius fell when he was 1 year old into the kitchen fire, and he damaged his hand. That's why it was gnarled up like that. It grew that way. And he was able still to be an artist and to make a drawing of this hand. It was the first time I wrote a sonnet, and there was something about the material and the picture that wanted that kind of form. So, Hendrik Goltzius' hand. And did his mother make that little sound, her baby's hand stretched out to stop his fall? She'd reached to snatch him, hold the fire back. The molten hand clutched round a coal refused. Its flesh insisted. The claw remaining grew. Veins laced pathways, sinews scraped and clung, entwined across the forming bones. It made an other thing. This strange topography became the drawer's hand, a channel for the eye. The sculpted thing could neither close nor open, and all sensation flowed into the pen. Its nerves refashioned sight. Perfection brought about by tempering, the ruined hand annealed in figured light. Then there was the Trojan War. That was earlier. This is Penthesilea's horse speaking. And Penthesilea was queen of the Amazons. She was one of the few people who ever met Achilles, a big, bad, scary Greek warrior, their biggest guy, their strongest guy, in hand-to-hand combat. And she led the Trojan army into battle after Achilles had killed Hector and, you know, dragged him around the walls of Troy. And Penthesilea did it for Andromache, Hector's wife. And this is the horse's, I won't say it, this is the horse's version of the story of that day. Penthesilea's horse. I knew by morning this was our last day. She knew too, in the way humans know things. They watch us for signs. I longed for her each time she went away. No one could ride me like her. I wanted her legs around me. This was the first time she dressed me for battle, and I was nervous. When Achilles saw her, he rode in close. I could smell old hay barns and rotting mint. I saw in his face how he wanted her, the boy in her and the woman too. The sweat ran from his arms. She went straight for him. For Andromache, she did this. She breathed into my neck. Our swiftness carried the wind. Her hands pushed under the blades of my shoulders. 3 times we pulled in close, made feint of striking. He fell half sideways, jabbing at nothing. I saw his big arm sweat on each hair. She pulled off her helmet so her hair streamed out. I saw the look in his eyes. It should all stop there. They should stay there. In the memory of horses, that is just how they are. But he let us close in, then held back the blow. She struck, he fell, she moved in. Then his weight came on top of us. He grappled in her arms. She whispered, "Run, Shinkala." I felt her breath go. He had her. I rolled forward. I wanted to crush him, but she grabbed for my mane. Then his sword split the joint of her elbow. When she fell, her eyes went away from me. I raised up to kill him and saw her between us. He spoiled her then without holding back. When he had finished, he lifted her up. I saw how Achilles was shocked not to have her. This was Penthesilea. She belonged to no one. Maybe 2 more poems, but right. We all have loss. This is a poem of loss called The Returning. How can I ask if you will come back? You will not come back. There cannot be return from the gates, the palaces of a place not earth where they say you have gone. Bring me your shirt, a necktie, a pair of your socks, anything. Bring a cup you've drunk from, a spoon you've put in your mouth. I will cry out from happiness. I will stop all this. I will, like the shutter's eye, open for my slice of eternity. I forgot. For a moment I thought you might have come into the room. I cannot bear to stop. When I stop, you are not here. You are everywhere, at once, in me, outside of me, and not. What can you have become? Some winged creature? Some transformation of your simple earthly self? There is nothing I believe in, see, or sense. I walk over to a window. I sit down in a chair. I stare past that hollow in the ground. And the sound I hear, intangible, not even the echo of your voice. If you are changed now, become one of them. I know your dear, plain self will not return. There is no safe return. Today, a girl is swimming off the coast, swept overboard. The heart stops for her. Keep on, keep on. How can she keep on? How alone is the body out there? Oh, let you never be alone. Let one of us hold you constantly in this strange ether that is your realm no longer. each of us treading, supporting you with our tired arms, until one day we just let go, either standing quiet at the cave of light that keeps the entrance to this place we live, or marking your place again and again until no marker stands. We will wear out with understanding. Even breath wears out. This is the last poem in the book. It's called Arioso, a musical term for a place between speech rhythm and song. It's a good place for a poet to be. Arioso. Then the voice will come and fill up the spaces in the violins. The scraped bellies of the cellos will fill, and the violas, the double basses the size of children, each one holding a voice. And that voice will mount up, will press into the spaces between things, the layers of socks folded, of woolen shirts in bureau drawers, of empty coat sleeves, hats without heads. It will press between the edges of bricks, the tails of rats lying close in a cold wind. It will wind into the backs of clouds. It will howl. It will enter every bowl that has ever held soup. It will sing for its supper. It will sup. It will whine and then plead. It will soften, and then it will ask, "Are you warm enough? Have you light? Are you cold? Would you like something to eat? Is there someone with you? Are you alone?" And then you will cry and lie down in your feather bed and feel the great skims of your loneliness lifting away from you. Someone will speak to you and a change come over you. Your skin will be moist and fresh and remember itself, its own name. Then the winnowing will come through you, and you will sit up and laugh and go out under the trees, and a coil unwind in your throat, and the arc of your singing will come out.